It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hello, hello, welcome, welcome, one and all. It is May 17th, 2022, and it is 1900 UTC. I always get it. It's, whenever I say UTC, it always sounds funny when I say it out loud. But anyway, it is time for some news, you news hounds. And this is fresh news, May 17th news. This is a Tuesday. Of course, you know, as we've been doing, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm in the office, so I'm recording this ahead of time. And then, was it next week? Next week we go to Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. So I've got a voice recorder, and I have a cable for it. I think I'm just going to order an SD card reader. That way I can discreetly manipulate the audio at work, and maybe no one will notice. So shh, don't tell anybody. All right. Because that way I can upload the show. I can record it, like, in my car or something. Or in a break room on the voice recorder, and then upload it later in the day. All right. Well, we'll experiment with it. We'll see what we can do. Anyway, today is May 17th, and there's a lot of news to get to. Not as much death as you might expect from news to me, but still plenty of sadness. All right. So we go ahead and begin in Mexico. Disappearances reach record high of 100,000 amid impunity. The number of people reported as disappeared in Mexico is at a record high of 100,000 figures. Government data, which goes back to 1964, shows that almost all the disappearances have occurred since 2007, when then-President Felipe Calderón launched his war on drugs. The United Nations has called it a human tragedy of enormous proportions. Many of the missing are victims of organized crime, and hardly any of those responsible are punished. The latest update to the National Registry of Missing People, kept by Mexico's Interior Ministry, shows that over the past 2 years, the number of disappeared has risen from 73,000 to more than 100,000. Three-quarters of those reported missing were men, and one-fifth were under the age of 18 at the time they disappeared. Relatives of the disappeared say it's very weird to call them disappeared. It's such a strange status to have. Relatives of the disappeared say the government is not doing enough to find them, and that officials are indifferent when they report their loved ones missing. Many have taken matters into their own hands, digging up unmarked graves in the hopes of finding remains of their loved ones. Oof. On May 10th, the day Mexicans marked Mother's Day, hundreds of women took to the streets to demand authorities do more to locate the missing and punish those behind disappearances. According to the UN, only 35 of the recorded disappearances have led to convictions of perpetrators. That's pretty tough. 35 out of 1,000. That's not a good record. It said that the staggering rate of impunity was mostly to blame on the lack of effective investigations. It leaves victims' families, already deeply affected by the disappearance of their loved ones, to cope alone with the additional burden of trying to ascertain what happened to them, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights said in a statement. Rights group Centro Prod asked on Twitter how many more have to go missing for the government to come up with a policy to prevent and eradicate disappearances. The state with the highest number of disappearances is Jalisco, where the Jalisco New Generation Cartel has its power base. In recent years, migrants have increasingly been among those reported missing. Last year, 349 foreign nationals were reported as disappeared, compared to 89 the previous year, according to a report by the Jesuits Missing Migrant Search Program. So, very... troubling indeed. It's a wild, the number is so high. It's really sad. Well, don't worry. We're still hurting people across the ocean, too. Dozens injured in Israeli police attack on Palestinian funeral. That's right. the state of Israel just cannot go a day without... killing Palestinians, it seems. More than 70 Palestinians were injured after Israeli police lobbed tear gas canisters and shot rubber-coated bullets at a funeral procession for a young Palestinian man who had succumbed to injuries sustained at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound last month. Hundreds of mourners joined the funeral procession on Monday from Khalid al-Sharif, who was pronounced dead on Saturday. Al-Sharif suffered a serious head injury on April 22nd after Israeli police fired rubber-coated bullets at Palestinians at Jerusalem's most holy sensitive site. Palestinian witnesses and al-Sharif's family say he was shot in the head with a rubber-coated bullet, which Israeli authorities have suggested. While Israeli authorities have suggested he died from injuries sustained when he fell on the ground, Israeli hospital officials declined to give a precise cause of death. Amateur video of the attack shows a large group of Palestinians running away from the direction of heavy Israeli fire. Immediately after one shot, al-Sharif is seen falling on his face and lying motionless on the ground. Israeli police then took him away. After falling into a coma, al-Sharif died in a hospital. His body was taken to by Israeli authorities after his death until it was released to his family on Monday. Mourners at the funeral, some of whom were carrying Palestinian flags, took al-Sharif's body for prayers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque before proceeding to a cemetery. The Palestinian Red Crescent Rescue Service said 71 Palestinians were wounded from rubber bullets, stun grenades, and beatings after Israeli forces attacked the funeral. Al Jazeera reporter Wajid Waqfi, who was covering the funeral, said Israeli police attacked mourners and prevented them from carrying Palestinian flags. She also said dozens were arrested by Israeli police. 13 people required hospitalization, including 2 with eye injuries. According to Wadi Hillay Information Center, one of the Palestinians with an injury to the eye is a relative of al-Sharif. The relative, Nader al-Sharif, is reportedly in critical condition. Police said 6 officers were hurt and 20 Palestinians arrested, including 5 people suspected of an attempted hit-and-run. Israeli police said its forces acted resolutely against hundreds of lawbreakers and violent rioters who took violent actions against the forces, endangering their lives. I'm not going to read more of the story because it just makes me mad. The Israeli state is just so fascist. It's just so terrible. It's just awful. Really, really is upsetting. Let's go to a place that is having some more unrest. Down in South Africa, there's fury as a white South African student urinates on books and laptop of a black student. Stellenbosch University in the Western Cape has come under fire after a video of a white student urinating on the computer and books of a black student went viral on social media. The incident reportedly happened on Sunday, May 15th, 2022, around 0400 at Hulsi Maria residence while the black first year was sleeping. An off-camera student asked him, "Why are you peeing in my room?" The young man with short brown hair and a beige hooded jacket laconically replies, "I'm waiting for someone," without interrupting what he's doing. The university strongly condemns this destructive, hurtful, and racist incident in a statement Monday. The university announced it immediately suspended the first year, who was captured in the act. "We are appalled by this type of behavior," said Vice President Wilm de Veers. "No student has the right to violate the dignity or rights of another student in this way." According to the student union, the victim was sleeping when he heard a noise in his room. When he woke up, the racist boy who was urinating on his desk, books, and laptop. And when questioned, the racist response was that this is what we do to black boys, the Congress of South Africa students said in a statement. The university student representatives, a white majority in a black majority country, argued that the incident was representative of the evil inflicted on minority, namely black students there. Protests broke out on campus Monday with students of all skin colors taking part. So, I'm sure if there's anything that comes out of this, we'll hear about it. That's just kind of a strange and disturbing story. It's an odd thing for someone to do. All right, well,
it's time for tech news.
It almost is. Let's just talk about the Mars rover real quick. NASA rover begins key drive to find life on Mars. NASA's Perseverance rover has reached a big monument in its mission. Tuesday, we will see the 6-wheeled robot begin the climb up an ancient delta feature in the crater where it landed. It will roll uphill, stopping every so often to examine rocks that look to have the best chance of retaining evidence of past life on the planet. On its way back down, Perseverance will collect some of these rocks, placing the samples at the base of the delta to be retrieved by later missions. Isn't that something? I thought that's pretty cool. The goal is to bring this material back to Earth in the 2030s for detailed inspection. The Delta and Jezero crater is the main astrobiological target of Perseverance, said Deputy Project Scientist Dr. Katie Stack Morgan. These are the rocks that we think likely have the highest potential for containing signs of ancient life, and can also tell us about the climate of Mars and how this has evolved over time. So, the rover made its spectacular landing in the middle of Mars's 45-kilometer-wide Jezero crater on February 18, 2021. Since then, it's been testing its tools and instruments, flying an experimental mini-helicopter, and gathering a general impression of its surroundings. The robot's chief purpose is going to the near-equatorial bowl of the Red Planet to study the huge mound of sediments in the west. Long suspected to be a delta based on satellite imagery, Perseverance's initial observations on the ground have now confirmed this assessment. A delta is a structure built up from the silt and sand dumped by a river as it enters a wider body of water. The sudden deceleration that occurs in the river's flow allows anything carried in suspension to fall out. In Jezero's case, the wider body of water was probably a crater-wide lake that existed billions of years ago. Rivers that flow into a delta will bring nutrients, which are helpful for life, obviously. And then the fine-grained sediment that is brought and laid down at a high rate in a delta is good for preservation. Also, if there is life in the hinterland, this can be brought down the river and concentrated in a delta. In recent days, Perseverance has maneuvered itself to an on-ramp to the delta dubbed Hawksbill Gap. This is a gentle incline that will take the robot to an elevation of a few tens of meters above the crater floor. So, this is very cool. And so, yeah, anyway, it's pretty cool. It's an interesting action. Perseverance is expected to put down its first rock stash when it returns to the crater floor at the end of the year. This depot will comprise not just those rocks gathered during the Hawksbill descent, but four samples collected in previous months out of the crater floor. NASA, together with the European Space Agency, is in the advanced stages of planning the missions required to go and retrieve the depot. These ventures, which will incorporate another rover, a Mars rocket, and a carrier spacecraft, should be launched towards the end of the decade. Perseverance has plenty more years of work ahead of it after it has put down its first rock stash. It will drive back up to the very top of the delta and beyond to visit rocks that look like they could be remnants of the shoreline. Those deposits are made of carbonate minerals and again look to have formed in a setting conducive to the recording of past life, if it ever has existed. And this is really cool. I don't know. I think what's really cool to me is just the idea that, oh, this looks like a delta. Let's send a robot. Oh, yeah, this totally is a delta. We think water was here now. And I don't know. It's kind of sad to think that if there was like a whole planet. I don't know. I always think about that. It's like, man, what if there was a whole civilization, you know, a whole planet full of people, and they're just all gone, and there's no history. Or we don't have any history. They're just like, it's like they never existed. I don't know. It's the futility of life, I guess. Speaking of the futility of life, in Japan, a man gambled away a huge accidental COVID payment. A 24-year-old man was mistakenly paid millions of Japanese yen, has already lost the money through online gambling, his lawyer says. The man received 46.3 million yen, $357,000 in his bank account, money from a COVID relief fund that was supposed to be shared among 463 people. He initially said he would cooperate with officials, but has since vanished. The southern town of Abu in Japan's Yamaguchi Prefecture is suing the man and also considering criminal action. The blunder happened when 463 low-income households were meant to receive 100,000 yen, which is $770 each, as part of a government scheme to ease financial strain caused by the pandemic. But on April 8th, all of the funding, 46.3 million yen, was accidentally deposited into the man's personal bank account. An investigation has found that he withdrew 600,000 yen every day for about 2 weeks. When authorities finally contacted him, he said he no longer had the money. "I've already moved the money. It can't be returned," he's quoted as saying. "It cannot be undone anymore. I will not run. I will pay for my crime." However, he has now vanished. All right. Well, here's a song.
Imagination sets in. Pretty soon I'm singing. Do, do, do. Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to Anon Radio powered by SDF. And SDF, well, that's powered by you. So thank you so much for being here and for tuning in and just using SDF. It's always a great time. You can do all sorts of stuff. You know, like, you can have an on-radio show. There's still spots in the calendar. All you go to anonradio.net. Or you can just listen. Hang out. Use SDF. There's lots of really cool stuff. You can write your own programs. You can compile stuff. You're on a website. Go check out Gopher. Gemini is really cool. Check out the B-board for that. There's just a million. If you want to do it with a computer, you could probably get it done on SDF. So it's just a blast. I enjoy it a lot. One day, I'll come up with some ad copy for SDF, just because I like it. All right. Stick around at 1930 UTC for the Dubious Goals Committee, but stick around now for the remainder of the news, because we're going...
World News.
That's right. We're also doing domestic stuff.
Uh-oh.
That's right. Biden reverses... Well, this is a good thing, I guess. Biden reverses Trump withdrawal of U.S. Army trainers from Somalia. Up to 500 Special Force advisors will train Somali forces to combat a growing threat of al-Shabaab militants. The U.S. will send up to 500 soldiers back on full-time deployment to Somalia to train the country's army to combat the increasing threat posed by al-Shabaab militants. The White House insisted that the move, deepening the U.S. long-term military commitment in an intractable foreign conflict, did not contradict Joe Biden's overall policy of disengaging from forever wars, which underlay the withdrawal from Afghanistan. The decision does not affect overall deployments in the region, officials said on Monday, but replaces a rotating deployment with a persistent presence, longer tours by the same Special Force soldiers. They argued the deployment should not be called permanent, as that implies the soldiers would be there forever. The move marks a reversal of DJT's abrupt decision in the last weeks of his presidency to withdraw 750 troops who had been stationed in Somalia until then. A senior official called Trump's decision irrational. It was an abrupt and sudden transition to a rotational presence, the office said. Since then, al-Shabaab, the terrorist group in Somalia that is al-Qaeda's largest, wealthiest, and deadliest affiliate, has unfortunately only grown stronger. So yeah, and if we go back to what we were doing last week, where we're looking at maps all the time, and we're like, well, what's going on? Where is it? What's going on here? Well, we'll go to my favorite website now, or at least for maps. I really like their maps. They're very clear. It's geology.com. And Somalia is on the opposite side. If we're talking about, you remember where Togo was, at like the underboob of Africa, if we're looking at the west coast as a breast sticking out of the side. Well, Somalia's on the other side, and I believe they call it the Horn of Africa. On the east coast, there's a spot that just juts out into the Indian Ocean, and that is Somalia. It's south of the middle. It's south of Yemen and Saudi Arabia. And it's about as far east as Tasmania. What's that other island that's out there? I don't know. That little island, Madagascar. There we go. Can you tell I went to an American school? I don't know my geography. That's why I looked looking at these maps. But anyway, Somalia is out there. It's the country that's on the horn, or right there sticking out on the east side. It's bordered by Ethiopia and Kenya. So when we're talking about Kenya and Ethiopia and Somalia, we're talking about the far east coast right there near the water. And then when we're talking about Togo and Burkina Faso and Niger and stuff, that's on the other side. So I think I'll find the map one day. Essentially, there was a map made up. It's an evil thing. In the 1800s, whenever Europe got together and decided to just split up Africa, and then they just went through and just committed, it's just like, we're going to go through and just commit genocide and destroy this entire continent. Let's divide it up so that we don't have to fight amongst each other. Very weird, very brutal, terrible time. But anyway, it kind of helps, because then it's like, oh, that's why all the French-sounding places are here, and why all the Germans are here. Anyway, Just so you know, that's where Ethiopia is. Copy link. Let's go over here to TX0. When we do a pre-record, I like to use TX0.org, which is another SDF. It's an SDF URL link shortener. In COM, you can throw in a link and get a short link out that goes to SDF.org and then is a shortener. But I don't know if they're the same program or not, but they work really well. If you want to see a map of where Somalia is, go to tx0.org, that's tangoxray0.org, /YV, that's Yankee Victor, or YV, you Victory, I don't know, Young Virgins, I'm not sure, tx0.org/YV. All righty, let's keep on in Africa, and let's talk about Libya. Libya, armed clashes in Tripoli as power struggle deepens. We've got about 7 minutes to go, so let's get it going. Hurry up, Marcus. Libya parliamentary-appointed government, backed by powerful Field Marshal Khalifa Haftar, announced on Tuesday that it was pulling out of the capital, Tripoli, the seat of the rival executive branch, after several hours of fighting triggered by its arrival. Endowed with the most abundant reserves in Africa, Libya has been plagued since the fall of Muammar Gaddafi's regime in 2011 by a series of political crises and violence that are undermining the transition process that's supposed to turn the page on years of dictatorship. In mid-morning, the press service of the government appointed by parliament sent a statement that its prime minister, Fatih Bashagha, and several of his ministers had left Tripoli to preserve the safety of citizens. Earlier in the night, it had announced the arrival in Tripoli of Bashagha and ministers to begin the work of the government, but this has led to fighting for several hours in the city between armed groups. The AFP journalist was not able to identify these factions precisely. In the Tripoli area, both sides have the support of armed groups still very influential in the west of the country, but those whose allegiances are traditionally shifting. Al-Nawasi, a major militia group in the capital, welcomed Mr. Bashagha's entry on Monday night before he withdrew. For its part, the government based in Tripoli emerged in early 2020 from a UN-sponsored political process, has not reacted to the events of the past few hours. Oh, I think my phone's going off. It is. I need to leave to go to work. That's what the alarm was for. Sorry about that. We'll pick up the pace a little bit. In a video broadcast by local media, Bashagha said in the morning that he was very well received in Tripoli and announced a press conference in the evening and would make a speech of unity to the Libyan people. In February, the parliament sitting in the east appointed Bashagha, a former interior minister, as the new prime minister. Spotty supported by the powerful Marshal Khalifa Haftar we mentioned before, the strongman of eastern Libya whose forces have tried to conquer the capital in 2019. But Bashagha so far has failed to oust the incumbent executive in Tripoli, led by businessman Abdelhamid Dabaiba. Dabaiba has repeatedly stated that he would only hand over power to a government formed after elections. Abdelhamid Dabaiba's government has as its main task the organization of legislative and presidential elections, initially scheduled for last December. However, disputes between local political leaders, particularly over the legal basis for the elections, led to the postponement postponement. And then it says seen die. I'm not sure what led to the postponement. Seen die. I'm not sure. That must be a phrase that I just don't know. Maybe it's Latin or something. Let's ask Google. It looks like sign die. Ah, here we go. Adjournment sign die. With reference to business or proceedings that have been adjourned with no appointed date for resumption. The case was adjourned, sign die. Oh, wow. I learned a new phrase. how neat is that? That is, I'm going to use that if I remember it. I'll remember it. I'll try anyway. Anywho, we've got 3 minutes and a few seconds. So if you want to check out a map of where the heck's Libya? Well, it's over there next to Egypt and Tunisia in the north. West kind of area. It borders the Mediterranean Sea. We'll just go back to our friend over there at tx0.org, and then we hold our breath. Always takes a second. I think I'm not sure what the delay is in loading that page for me. Always takes me a second. Once I'm there, it works great. tx0.org/y/w. That's Yankee Whiskey. So tangoxray0.org tx0.org/yw, and that will take you to a nice little map of Libya, and then you can see, kind of get some context for what we're talking about, as far as people in the West and people in the whatever. You can see that it's kind of there's a large East-West kind of divide there. Alrighty, what else is happening? Well, Ukraine ends battle for besieged Mariupol, evacuating last fighters from the steel plant. Ukraine's military said on Tuesday it was working to evacuate all remaining troops from their last stronghold in the besieged port of Mariupol, ceding control of the city to Russia after months of bombardment. The evacuation of hundreds of fighters, many wounded, to Russian-held towns likely marked the end of the longest and bloodiest battle of the Ukraine war and a significant defeat for Ukraine. So 8 people were killed and 12 wounded in a Russian airstrike on the village of Desna in the northern Ukrainian region of Cherniv on Tuesday. The region's governor said earlier on Tuesday, "Yes, there are no more occupiers in Cherniv region, but it's easy for them to reach us. Don't ignore air raid warnings." The other thing here with Ukraine stuff going on, Finland and Sweden should be able to reach an agreement with Turkey over their objections to the two Nordic countries joining the alliance. Turkey surprised many NATO allies on Monday by saying it would not support membership for Sweden. That's what we talked about yesterday. And Russia is going to expel 2 Finnish diplomats in a tit-for-tat move. Alrighty, what else? Well, a drug smuggling tunnel with rail system uncovered on U.S.-Mexico border. U.S. authorities discovered an underground drug smuggling tunnel on the California-Mexico border that runs the length of a football field, which is 100 yards, and contains reinforced walls, electricity, ventilation, and a rail system. Investigators discovered the tunnel, which led to a warehouse in an industrial area on U.S. soil last week. The tunnel is located about a half mile from the Otay-Mesa border crossing between Tijuana and San Diego. More than a dozen others have discovered in the past 2 decades. So, surprise, surprise, they built a tunnel where they've built tunnels before. And Ethiopia is going to get $300 million World Bank grant for reconstruction. Ethiopia and the World Bank signed a pact for grant of $300 million. But that's all the time we got. Thanks so much for being
here. Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Dubious Goals Committee coming up. Also, Abbott restarted making baby formula at their new Michigan plant, so if you got babies, they should not starve to death, hopefully. USA! Bye-bye.
Person. Online friends actually became real friends. Today,
7, 6, 5.